And I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, May 10th, 2023. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety for the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone. I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Fuzeci.
Here.
Commissioner Hankins.
Here.
Commissioner Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Okay. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is the swearing in of Anya Goldsby as Commissioner of the Freedom of Information Commission.
Anya, to stand up and raise your right hand and ask you, do you solemnly swear that you will faithfully discharge according to law your duties as a commissioner of the Freedom of Information Commission to the best of your abilities, so help you God?
I do.
Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you, Anya. Great. Okay. The first item is consideration of the commission's minutes of the meeting dated April 12th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was on the last meeting, but it was listed incorrectly, so we're just going to go ahead and do that again. So I move the adoption of the minutes of the Commission's regular meeting of April 12th, 2023 for adoption.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll conduct a roll. Those in favor, Commissioner Einhorn? Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins? Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Goldsby? Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. So, I'll read it. I'm all set. Thanks. All right. I appreciate it.
It'll be a pen.
Yeah. Thank you. So the second item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting dated April 26, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the commission's regular meeting minutes of April 26, 2023 for adoption.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, only even yes, passes unanimously. All right. So next we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. So first is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of April 12th, 2023. Excuse me, we did that. I apologize. First is docket number FIC 2021-0289, Travis Armstrong versus James Ravella, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Mr. Armstrong is it?
Okay. I'd like to be heard, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll mark it ready, Mr. Armstrong.
We respond to this here as well.
Okay. Attorney?
Attorney Milner.
Milner?
Milne,
M-I-L-M?
M-I-L-N-E.
Thank you. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0347, Travis Armstrong versus James Ravella, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. This was withdrawn. Mr. Armstrong, would you like to go forward on this matter? Since you've withdrawn it, I would assume not.
If I withdraw, I must then care about it. That's really care about the Willie Manny case. I have no paperwork in front of me. I've had a busy day today, so.
All right, we'll mark it ready, and then when we come to it, you can let us know, okay?
Correct.
That way it won't go away. All right, next is docket number FIC 2022-0233, Richard Quint versus Angel Horace, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, I'm Richard Quint.
Would you like that marked ready, Mr. Quint?
No, I would not, because I have evidence that I need to submit. I have affidavits. I have an affidavit from Dr. Corey Preston states that he was in front of Judge Oliver on September 17th. Or he states in an affidavit that he was in front of Judge Oliver
on September 17th. Hold on. So if you would like to talk about this matter, we'll mark it ready. I just want to know whether you want to talk about it or not.
I'd like a continuance because I need to submit evidence to the state to support my...
All right, we'll mark it ready and you can ask for a continuance when it comes up, okay?
Okay.
All right, unless you have to run. I mean, unless you have to get off the phone.
Oh, I don't think I have a phone yet. I don't know.
Okay, so just hang on and we'll get to your case and then you can explain then, all right?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0045, Russell Zimberlin versus State Employee Retirement Commission, State of Connecticut et al. Russell Zimberlin, are you there?
I'm here, Ronnie.
Okay. Is there anyone else here on that matter? Attorney.
C-L-A-K.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0220, Russell Zimberlin versus Comptroller, State of Connecticut, Office of the State Comptroller, et al. You there, Mr. Zimberlin?
I'm here and ready.
Can I get Mark? Okay, and then is there anyone there for the State of Connecticut? Thank you, Attorney Cieslak. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0229, Mark Lemke versus Building Official, Town of Westport, Town Planner, Town of Westport, and Town of West Park. Is there anyone here on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Wolfsky?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0240, David Moore versus Mayor, City of Shelton, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move, this was a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0325, Frank Bell versus Chief Police Department, City of New Britain, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Attorney John Dykin for the respondent.
Dykin,
D-Y-D-I-A-D-A-U-N.
Do you wish to be heard?
I just ask that the commission adopt the hearing officer's report and dismiss the matter.
Is Frank Bell there, please? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the complaint is not here, there's no objection to the respondent to this dismissal, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Dykin. All right. We'll go back to the matters that are marked ready. Before we hear these cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As previously indicated, the entire meeting is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to request a recording. And we will post the recording from this meeting on our website soon after the meeting. If anybody has any issues accessing that, let our staff know. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. All right. So we'll take up the first matter, which is docket number FIC 2021-0289, Travis Armstrong versus James Ravella, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. I'd like to come forward.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, Mr. Armstrong. All right, Mr. Armstrong, would you like to begin?
Sure. Okay, so there was a DNA analysis taken on a particular day. I'm pretty sure it was in the paperwork. I couldn't have my paperwork in front of me today, but there was I forgot the name of the word, but when everything is complete with the DNA analysis, a certain report comes out and tell you how many DNAs was on this particular item. The lab technician testified at trial. She said she testified under oath and said she never put it through the lab, but I have proof that she did. She basically perjured herself on the stand. And I have one of the reports. She didn't give me one report that would basically get the whole lab in trouble. I've been asking for the whole time since I've been down for 4 years. I've been asking for this report. I haven't got it. They're telling me there's no way they could do it, but they put it in the lab. It came back. No DNA was on it. They went to another police station, got some type of DNA, was left over years ago, did another analysis, and it came back. DNA was on it. So I wanted the report that they did the first time, telling me how many DNAs was on it the first time. They skipped that out. It didn't come when I filed for the whole jacket from the DNA lab. They left that part out. And basically, that's what I want. I forgot the name of the word, but that's what I've been asking for the whole time.
Mr. Armstrong, I think it's deconvolution you're talking about?
Yes. Thank you so much. That's what it is. That's the exact word. Sorry. I'm kind of done with that right there. I'm sorry, because basically today I just basically got acquitted of all the charges. So it's been a busy day for me today. So I got to go to court tomorrow. I'm basically going to get released. And I basically want to take up this matter when I get out, because this is part of the reason why I got convicted in the first place. But the Supreme Court threw everything out. So I'm probably going home probably Friday. But I'm going to take up this matter when I get out.
Well, good for you.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel, can you identify yourself, please?
Attorney Colin Milne, counsel for Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection.
Would you like to respond?
I'll be brief. We had a hearing in August of 2022. We presented evidence, our witnesses that reviewed the request for the information requested. A lab file that the complainant requested was provided to the complainant. In the file, there was one deconvolution report. There were not two deconvolution reports. There was no record or evidence that a second deconvolution report existed. The agency conducted a very thorough search. It was reviewed by another attorney in our office, and those documents were disclosed to the complainant. I understand the complainant's argument. We have no knowledge or record of a second deconvolution report in this matter. And it's not necessary that there would be multiple deconvolution reports in one case file.
Can you tell me, what is a deconvolution report?
I'm not the scientist. That's probably why I'm in law. it is a method using a program called STR-MIX that essentially isolates mixtures of DNA to get to one single source or single DNA so they can pull it out.
Thank you.
So think about if you think about it in sharpening an image, like in a telescope, use a kind of a matrix of deconvoluting convolution. And it's a similar process for DNA.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Armstrong, did you wish to respond to that?
No, I really just want this on record. So when I get out, I could keep continuing with this fight. That's basically what I'm here. I wasn't even going to come here today, but I figured just to get this on record so I could just be somewhere I could be found. At the end of the day, I never got it. This should have been in the jacket in the first place, and I know what they did. It's just a whole scam job they did. They just covered their tracks up, and they got people working for them, covering them up. They know they did a bad job, and they did a bad thing to a good person, basically. And, you know, I guess it's going to keep up with the scam they're doing right now. So, you know, they didn't give it to me. So, I really got nothing to say about just as long as it's on record and long as they know that I'm still fighting this and it's going to continue to get fought even when I get out. They're not going to get away with this. It took mad years out of my life. Family members died. It's people I can never see again with the scam and sham that they're pulling on me.
Great. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Armstrong, this is Commissioner Goldsby. I just have a question. Were you provided any documentation that said that the second DNA test was actually performed?
Yes. When they gave me a slip that says basically they put it through the CODIS and they put it in national. It came back at this time, no DNA was found. You have to get a DNA sample from the suspect. What I am telling them is that my first felony as an adult in Connecticut was in 2008. My DNA has been in the system since 2008. If they put it nationally and through CODIS in Connecticut, that means it would hit the first time. They wouldn't have to go get another sample or sneak behind my back and do DNA analysis somewhere else, and then automatically just pops up. Then magically, DNA just pops up, and I get convicted. That doesn't happen. You know what I mean? They did me wrong. And to your question, yes, they did give me, and I got that in my cell right now. There's a whole reason why I'm doing this. I'm just not doing this for no reason. Like, I just want to sit around in meetings all day and talk about some stuff that I don't have. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Any further questions?
No.
Any other commissioners? All right, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move after the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hank, a second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call on those. Excuse me, is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Armstrong.
Yes, thank you.
So what does that mean? Exactly.
So that one, we adopted the decision dismissing the matter.
Okay.
So that's been dismissed. Then there's the next matter that's on the record. So it's you again, Mr. Armstrong, FIC 2021-0347, Travis Armstrong versus James Rabano, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. So I know you're here, Mr. Armstrong, and Attorney Milne is also here. Would you like to argue on this matter? Did you want a continuance on this matter? What was it that you needed?
Is this the one from Willie Manning?
This is the one that was withdrawn. I'm not sure. You withdrew one of them. You went forward on the first one. You withdrew the second.
All right, so if I withdrew from it, that means that I didn't care about it. But the first one that you just basically denied me, you say that that's the Willie Manning one, right? I just want to make sure because I have no paperwork in front of me.
I don't know that, sir. I'm not sure it's the Willie Manning one I'm looking for. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, I appreciate you anyways. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Unless you want to be heard.
No, I'm okay.
I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, this was a withdrawal with the...
Can I just hang up?
You might lose Mr. Quinn.
Hold on, Mr. Quinn.
Mr. Quinn, if I lose you, I'm going to call you back and send it, okay?
Call me back? Okay.
Oh, no, don't hang up yet. Don't hang up yet,
okay.
Just not yet.
Okay. Is there only one person on the line?
No, there were two.
So,
it was Mr. Armstrong had two cases and Mr. Quinn.
Right. Why don't we just finish this one?
So we'll just vote on the second Armstrong matter. And then you're welcome.
I'm assuming there was nobody else on the line?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I think I was still in the middle of a movie withdrawal case 347 for adoption.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor on the matter 0347. Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Paul Megan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. So what should they do when they're hanging up? Should they do something?
Just kidding. I don't know if it happened over
so
this
good.
Location, so I don't know.
Really?
Should yeah.
Oh, really?
Couldn't follow
the right. Hi, officer. This is Cindy. I'm so sorry. We had to hang up on Mr. Plant, but we need to get him back on the phone. We have an issue with our phone. Thank you.
No problem.
Hi, Mr. Plant. We got you back on.
Okay.
Hi, Mr. Quinn. This is Alwyn Egan.
All right.
Great. So we're calling docket number FIC 2022-0233, Richard Quint versus Angel Quiros, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. You there, Mr. Quint, correct?
Yes, I'm here.
And Attorney Kyle, would you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, I'm Attorney Brown. I represent the respondents in this matter.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to request a continuance at this point in time because I need to submit a copy of the transcript from September 17th, 21. Dr. Corey Preston states in his affidavit that he was in front of a hearing on September 21st, 21 in front of Judge Oliver when the hearing was in front of Judge Dawn Westbrook. So basically he perjured himself in his affidavit. And I'd like to be able to submit the transcript to show this prior to the hearing. I think it's very relevant.
Okay.
Because the information was what I wanted, what I was looking for, is what occurred off the record at the hearing in front of Judge Westbrook that day, not in front of Judge Oliver, because there was no hearing in front of Judge Oliver on the 17th, so.
All right, so let's hear what Attorney Brown has to say in response to that, please.
My response is that Dr. Freston signed the affidavit. He attested to the fact that there was a hearing. To the extent that the complainant has evidence otherwise, of course you should hear.
Well, I have a hearing that says that the hearing was in front of Judge Westbrook. Not, I have the transcript that shows that it was Judge Westbrook on that day that the hearing was held in front of, and not Judge Oliver as whoever printed up the affidavit for Dr. Preston signed stated.
They stated the wrong judge. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it was not held in front of that judge. So
the mistake in the affidavit is only the judge, and that's the only thing you're challenging?
Well, I'm definitely challenging that and the information and the responses from Dr. Preston.
So, and you're also challenging the content of the affidavit beyond that?
Yes. He lied on one thing. What else is, what else in the affidavit can I take
okay.
as true?
Understood. And Attorney Brown, you agree to the continuance then?
I certainly do not agree to the continuance. It's my understanding that we rushed through this process in order to search for the records for Mr. Quint, which were not found. And so that's really the issue before the commission today, whether or not there were documents responsive to his request. There was a search that was conducted. The records that he is seeking do not exist. In fact, what he's purporting, the department agreed to through Dr. Preston at whatever hearing may have occurred, is not something that is medically responsible for that doctor to do, which is to increase this gentleman's purported prescription for an opioid from 5 milligrams to something higher than that. It would not occur during a hearing of this matter. It would be something that would be reviewed by a medical provider, and a medical provider would issue a prescription for that if it was warranted. So this incident that he's describing categorically just did not occur. And the search was conducted, notwithstanding anything else, and no record was found. So, you know, you can certainly take in evidence as you think deems appropriate, but the core of this matter is whether or not there are responsive documents, and there are.
Well, this did occur.
One second, sir. One second,
okay.
Please. turning
Mr. Chairman, yeah, may
yes.
I be heard?
Just identify yourself.
Sure. For the record, Danielle McGee, I was the hearing officer in this matter. So I sort of want to take a step back and reorient the commission to what was requested.
We're just dealing with the request for a continuance. That's all. We're not arguing the merits. We're just dealing with the request for the continuance.
So I would not recommend that the matter be continued. And that is because this was a request to inspect his medical records, an appeal from what he alleged to be a denial of his right to inspect his medical records. He was allowed to inspect those medical records under the DOC's medical records review process. And as set forth in the report, under the current case law, the Mr. Quint does not have the right to inspect records. The DOC does not have to bring records to him or bring him to the records, even though they allowed him to do that in this case. So he did review his records. By the time we got to the hearing, Mr. Quint said, there's this one document I think should exist that I don't have. And the DOC, in my opinion, going beyond what they had to do at that point, said they would go back and look for this document. They did that. They submitted an affidavit representing that had occurred and that they did not find any responsive record. So again, back just, I know it's a very long-winded answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, but the case is about Mr. Quint's request to inspect his records. And under the law, that's not something he's entitled to do. And that's why my recommendation was a dismissal.
Well, the case is for 404,
Mr. Quint, 1 second. Are you finished?
And so to your question about a continuance, I don't believe a continuance is warranted in this matter because I think, one, what he's asking for falls outside the scope of what was requested and what was at issue on appeal in this case before the commission. I don't think what he is contesting in terms of requesting that continuance is really something that, even if it were at issue, would make a difference in this case because the respondents did present evidence that they don't have this document he's looking for.
Okay, so talk about the affidavit. Who was the affidavit?
So there were two affidavits that were submitted after the hearing. One was from this Dr. Festin, and his testimony in the affidavit pertained to the fact that he had attended this 2021 hearing and that there was no documentation to support Mr. Quint's contention that there was this recommendation to increase his medication, that factually that didn't occur, so therefore there would be no documentation. And then there was a second affidavit submitted by Attorney Brown about her direction to the DOC staff to go and look where these sort of records might be located, and that the staff could not locate any record that met the description of what Mr. Quint was looking for.
The affidavit that contains it sounds like there's an error. There was a hearing before some judge, and instead of they said that the individual attended a hearing before Judge so-and-so, but it was actually Judge Westbrook. I think that's what he said.
But I don't think that...
That's exactly what I said.
Which judge it was before is relevant to the point of whether the DOC maintains a record responsive to Mr. Quint's contention that there is this documentation that shows that there was an increase in medication by this particular doctor. So the affidavit is from the doctor who Mr. Quint says made this recommendation. The doctor
there
said
was an increase
was
in medication
Mr. Quint, you have to be quiet, please, while counsel's talking. You'll get an opportunity to speak, please. Thank you.
And so I think the relevant point here is that the doctor who would have been a part of that process is the individual who submitted the affidavit and said that documentation doesn't exist because that's not what occurred. And then in addition to that, the DOC also looked through their records and they could not find any documentation to meet that description.
So a reference to the judge in attending that hearing is not relevant to the specific facts?
I don't think it's relevant to the fact that the respondents conducted a search for that record as described by Mr. Quint and could not find it.
Okay. All right, thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
Commissioner Streeter. So just clarification, that was something outside of the original request that we're talking about here.
That's how I view it. Mr. Quint asked to inspect.
Remanding it back, you would do nothing because we're dealing with another case.
Correct.
They went above and beyond to look for another record that he brought up at the hearing.
Correct.
Thank you.
I have one question. I'm always learning when I come to these meetings. I understand that I was just surprised to learn that there is a statutory public agencies that you may have to go to the agency to get records. and that there looks like there's no statutory language that would say if you're in a prison or someplace where you can't leave, there'd be some arrangement. So I'm a little bit interested in the Department of Corrections has a voluntary procedure, or in this case, made an exception to bring the records, which
yes.
is the case. Is a,
thank you, Commissioner. Tracy Brown again. The department has an administrative directive in which it allows those who are authorized individuals to review medical records. We deem those who are the subject of those records authorized individuals, and therefore they are permitted to inspect their medical records.
This is a Department of Corrections administrative procedure.
That is correct.
You could or revise or not as the department. So anyway, I'm glad you have that procedure.
As am I.
Exactly, and I think that it's a good public service thing that you do it, and I'm a little surprised that the statutes don't deal with it, having read this case law. I actually looked in the case law because I was a little bit surprised about it. So with that in mind, I respect what you did. No further questions. And therefore, I think there's a lot of good faith brought to this case. Let me put it that way.
Commissioner Goldsby?
So it seems like there's, Commissioner Goldsby speaking, it seems like the claimant's argument is that the contents in the affidavit, the error of putting Judge Oliver versus Judge Westbrook now calls into question the overall substance of the document as a whole. So what's your response to that?
Right, that's my understanding, Danielle McGee, the hearing officer. That's my understanding of the contention that Mr. Quinn is making at this time. However, I think the important factor in terms of the evidence in this case, beyond what Commissioner Streeter's already raised, is that the respondents who have the burden of proof and went back, did the search, and they could not locate any record meeting that description in their possession. So the fact that Mr. Quint is challenging the accuracy of the affidavit because there is, as he says, the wrong judge being mentioned, I don't think that supersedes or undermines the evidence that I had from the respondents in terms of the search they conducted and what the result of their search was.
Might I add?
Attorney Brown?
To Dr. Freston's affidavit is also an attached order from Judge Oliver stating that there is no agreement between from the department with respect to any medication for Mr. Quint. So to his point that there may have been the
wrong agreement
judge,
wasn't with Judge Oliver, it was with Judge Westbrook.
Yes, there
Mr.
is
Quint,
a document
one second, please.
Stating that there was no agreement, and therefore if there's no agreement, there shouldn't be any documentation with respect to that either. So to counsel's point, the facts are that this did not happen factually and that there is no document because we looked for it and we couldn't find it, even though based upon the order, we believe that it shouldn't exist because the incident didn't happen.
Thank you. You've been very patient, Mr. Quint. Would you like to respond, please?
Yes, I would. Yes, there was an agreement with Judge Westbrook and Corey Freston off the record. I've written now since the case has been withdrawn, it's not ex parte communication for me to communicate with Judge Westbrook. I have written Judge Westbrook for her notes of the hearing off the record, which should show that Corey Freston did agree to upping the dose of my medications at that point in time. I'm also in the process of trying to subpoena Judge Westbrook to a different court hearing to get the records and have her notes subpoenaed into the courtroom to get the notes to show that this did occur and that this did, there should have been a record because, but the doctor, I had one doctor increase my medication from twice a day to three times a day on the 13th of September. Then on the 17th of September after the hearing, it got increased to 10 milligrams per Dr. Corey Freston, who agreed to it off the record. That's why there's nothing on the record, but there should be something in my medical record from the 17th of the increase of the medication, which is not there. It was there when I got transferred to Bridgeport Correctional Facility. So the doctor there stated that it was, or Dr. Blumberg stated that there was there. She was going to leave my medications alone. And then one of the APR or something DC'd all my medications. And all of a sudden this record allegedly disappeared. They lied on the affidavit with Dr. Corey Freston, so I have to assume that they're lying about the rest of this.
Okay. Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like, just not a question for anybody, just for conversation with the commission, is that typically, like, if I'm holding a hearing, if something goes off the record, there is no record. That's inherently the reason for it off the record. So I don't think there would be any records if you're off the record.
Yeah, but
this wasn't a question, Mr. Quinn.
Yeah, you have to ask for permission to speak. Okay. All right. So is there anything further on the motion for continuance that was filed by Mr. Quinn? I would entertain a motion regarding that motion for continuance.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we do not continue this hearing officer's report for consideration at a later date.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion with regard to the motion? It's been made by Commissioner Streeter regarding the continuous. Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of not continuing this. In other words, going forward. Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, O'Neagan, yes. So the matter is going to proceed today, sir. The motion for continuance is denied.
So we're going to have to refile this then?
No, we're going to go forward on the hearing officer's report itself.
I'm going to refile requesting the documents again.
Well, right now you get to argue. We just denied your right to continue this based on your argument concerning the affidavit, et cetera. So now you get to go forward.
How am I going to argue without having the proper evidence presented before the hearing?
Well, that's only one piece of your evidence, sir. So now you get to challenge the hearing officer's report and tell the commission why you think the hearing officer got it wrong. Okay?
Because you provided the wrong information.
Okay. But you have the floor now. Would you like to present your
argument? The hearing officer got the hearing wrong because she was provided the wrong information by the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
But she was provided affidavits which basically are lying. You know what I mean? Which I can prove, which I can show is lies. If the evidence would be, if I could have had a continuance to submit the evidence I needed to submit, I left the messages for Attorney Harmon this morning or whoever was it, Busman, and yesterday with stating this, because I didn't realize that the hearing was today, so I could have sent in the copies of the transcript and everything else showing that this is that Dr. Oliver was, or Dr. Preston was lying in his affidavit. Which basically, if you swear under perjury that you have, that everything is true to your best of your belief and knowledge, and something is not true in the affidavit, it's perjury. And that's what he did. He perjured himself when he stated that it was Judge Oliver, not Judge Westbrook, because the DOC happens to have some documentation from a different hearing in front of Judge Oliver that Judge Oliver couldn't find anything because the hearing wasn't held in front of Judge Oliver to have any type of record. It was held in front of Dawn Westbrook, the Honorable Dawn Westbrook, that would have showed that there was, that this did occur, and Dr. Corey Freston did increase the medication, and that there should have been notes in my medical chart from legal affairs stating that the medication was increased. Because when I came back to the facility after the hearing, my medication was increased for the next 4 months until I got transferred to Bridgeport Correctional Facility.
Thank you.
Yes.
Attorney Brown?
Yes, thank you. Attorney Brown, of the Department of Correction again. We would urge adoption of the hearing officer's report as written. We believe that, as stated by counsel, the issue before the commission originally was whether he had an opportunity to review his medical file. He conceded that he had reviewed the medical file. So the matter should really have been done at that point. But he indicated that he was looking for a specific document. And on behalf of the department, I agreed to go look for that document. It's his record. He should be entitled to have it. And so I agreed to go look for that document. And upon a search, We didn't find the document, and in an effort to bolster our search and the good faith effort, we provided an affidavit from Dr. Freston attesting to the fact that the hearing that he described, that he being Mr. Quint, did not occur and that he did not make any such agreement. At this point, if we could recant the affidavit, take it out of evidence, it still wouldn't make any difference to the fact that he had the review and that we conducted a thorough search and that the document that he's seeking does not exist, the department does not maintain it. And with that, I have nothing further unless you have any questions. But again, I urge adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. Attorney McGee,
I have a question. Okay. That's an issue. Can you just repeat what you said about taking the document out of the record? And how?
I don't think you can, but my thought is that if you did, you still would have sufficient evidence. No, it's not.
I got it's a point you were making, rather.
Yes, correct.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm not making a suggestion.
Point is, try to speak, please.
Not at this point. Attorney McGee?
I don't have anything further to add. In addition to what I've already stated, again, this was a request to inspect medical records and an appeal from the alleged denial of that request. And although under the FOI Act, based on the facts of this case, it's not something that the respondents were required to allow, they did under their own policies. And so he did have the opportunity to inspect as set forth in the hearing officer's report. And so there's no reason to find a violation in this case.
The commissioners have any questions?
Just
Mr. Hankins.
Yeah, Attorney McGee. So basically, the respondents went out of their way. They complained to do something they didn't have to do that was outside the scope of the complaint.
Well, I've never been allowed to inspect the records yet, anyway.
Mr. Quint,
which
you've got to go through the chair to speak, and right now somebody else is speaking. So
okay.
Please wait your turn.
Which started this whole thing up.
Correct.
Okay. So it falls under the saying no good deed kind of thing?
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Commissioner Streeter.
Yes, Commissioner Streeter here. I think that, you know, hearing Officer Daniel McGee as the trier of fact weighed the facts in this case, and based on the credible testimony of the complainant and the respondent and the evidence that was given, she found that there was no violation, and I concur with approving her hearing officer's report.
Thank you. Commissioner Goldsby.
So, Commissioner Goldsby, just for the sake of maybe just making this clear, if for some reason you did not have a copy of this affidavit, would your decision have been the same in this case?
It would have. Thank you.
Mr. Dezession.
I just want to amend a little bit or clarify in my mind what Commissioner Hankins said. I'm very happy that the Department of Corrections has this policy. But I would not say they did it acted because of a good deed. They acted because they have a policy on this issue and they follow the policy. Is that correct?
Are you asking me, sir?
Yes. I'm sorry, Attorney Brown.
Certainly, yes. Again, Tracy Brown. But I think the good deed was me actually going to search for a record that was not part of the scope of his request. And the turnaround is that he's... Well, it is what it is. You heard it today.
Thank you for searching, and I'm happy the policy exists. Thank you. Honestly, thank you for searching.
Thank you. Mr. Quint, you had something to say.
Yes. I was never allowed to even review my medical chart to begin with. Second off, how can I believe anything that the Department of Corrections is saying if they're trying to withdraw an affidavit that has falsified information on it? To the commission that where Dr. Preston clearly perjured himself in his affidavit, how can this without my evidence go forward? You know, I'm like, if they lied about what Dr. Preston stated. You know what I mean? And this hearing did occur. This stuff did happen. It was stated. It did, you know what I mean? And now they're blatantly just lying about it to the commission under oath. I'm like, I don't get this.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move the option of the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, we'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. So I want to thank you, Mr. Quint. Thank you, Attorney Brown. Thank you, Attorney McGee.
Can I request the minutes for this meeting, or I'll run out, please?
Yep, you can do that through the clerk's office after the meeting. Everything's being recorded.
Okay.
All right, thank you, sir. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0045, Russell Zimberlin versus State Employee Retirement Commission, State of Connecticut, Office of the State Comptroller.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Would parties please identify themselves for the record, starting with you, sir?
Russell Zimberlin, complainant.
Thank you.
Attorney Cindy Cieslak from Rose Kaler, representing the respondents.
Thank you.
Before we, can I just put on the record that my wife was a teacher, I mean a social worker, so she's part of the teacher's retirement board and a beneficiary of that, and indirectly I am a beneficiary because we're covered by the teacher's retirement, but I believe you are two different organizations, is that correct?
Two different medical examining boards and two different pension administrations.
So I don't believe I have a conflict because, but if any of you would believe I have a conflict, then two separate organizations.
I don't see a conflict.
Thank you.
This is Attorney Cieslak. The State in Place Retirement Commission administers most of the pension plans. The teacher's retirement plan is one they do not.
This is health. Anyway, yes. Thank you very much.
No conflict.
Thank you. And Mr. Zimberlin, are you an attorney?
I am.
I'll address you as Attorney Zimberlin. All right, would you like to begin?
In my FOIA request, I requested policy advice documents related to state employees within the State Employee Retirement System, or SERS, and documents related to municipal employees within the Municipal Employee Retirement System, or known as CMERS. The employees sustained injuries while they were in active service, and all employees' disability claims are presented to the Medical Examining Board, or the MEB, for an evaluation on whether it agrees that the member is disabled under the SERS or the CMERS statutory definition of disability. The MEB has complete discretion to decide whether a member meets the definition of disability and makes a recommendation to the State Employee Retirement Commission, or SERC, for final approval of whether a member is eligible for the disability pension. There is one definition of disability for all SERS employees and a separate definition for all CMERS employees. I would estimate that 95% of all claims before the MEB are state employees as opposed to the CMERS employees. In regards to Ciccarella's claim, she was a CMERS employee. It took three hearings for the MEB to even acknowledge that she was not a state employee and actually apply part of the correct statutory scheme. As to the attorney-client privilege exemption raised by CERC, it is our position that Rose Kaler only represents CERC. They do not represent the MEB. CERC is allowed to hire outside counsel only because it is allowed by statute. General Statute 5-155AH states the commission may hire general counsel who serve at the pleasure of the commission, have offices in the retirement division, and perform duties as directed by the commission. The commission may obtain such additional legal advice and assistance as it deems advisable. There is no corollary statute for the MEB. The MEB is not authorized to hire outside counsel, and it is our argument that they did not. Rose Kaler cannot unilaterally claim that they also represent the MEB. There is no document and evidence of any attorney-client relationship which verifies representation. All individual MEB members of the MEB are probably unaware that Rose Kaler is even claiming that it is their attorney. I've been in front of the MEB for hundreds of times for hundreds of hearings, and they have never mentioned that they are represented and they don't need actual representation. The MEB is not exposed to any legal liability for their determinations. The MEB is, by statute, an independent adjudicative body which makes disability determinations. If this commission agrees that there is no attorney-client relationship between the MEB and Rose Kaler, then disclosure is required, and this commission need not reach the issues of policy documents and waiver, which I'll get into. Since there is one definition of disability per type of employee, the CMERS and the SERS employee, any document provided to the MEB regarding the definition of disability can only be considered a policy document or policy advice, which is not exempt from disclosure under Freedom of Information, because the document applies to all applicants, even though it's presented on behalf of one applicant. CERC only raised the attorney-client privilege exemption. However, policy advice is not part of that exemption. In the previous Freedom of Information decision, the hearing officer found that the in-camera records contained interpretation of legal principles. Although I have not seen this document, I assume this refers to the agency's interpretation of the definition of disability. This interpretation is policy advice on how the MEB should evaluate claims. The document was submitted by the respondent to the MEB and likely relied upon when the MEB made its determination to those applicants. However, that policy advice generally applies to everybody. Any document interpreting the definition is not subject to the exemption. CERC may claim that since not all documents were provided to the MEB, and since CERC is a client, those documents are not subject to disclosure. However, on information and belief, the documents are read to the MEB in executive session, which is the purpose of the creation of those documents. The purpose of the documents is to clarify more complicated cases, which is policy advice generally applicable to all. Reading the documents to the MEB is the functional equivalent of providing the documents to the MEB. Moving on to the waiver argument, the hearing officer only evaluated the waiver claim in regard to disclosure of the documents from CERC to the Retirement Services Division. The hearing officer failed to evaluate the other claim of waiver, which was raised in its brief, or in my brief. In my September 21st, 2021 brief, I argued that waiver occurred when CERC discussed the contents of the document in public session. The meeting minutes and agenda discuss a legal written opinion. CERC's over-disclosure of the discussions of the document waives any claim it may have had to the attorney-client privilege. In conclusion, if this commission finds that the MEB is not a client of Rose Kaler, then documents must be disclosed. And the biggest problem that we're having is that the MEB has sole discretion on determining disability. We can't appeal that to court. And right now they're being provided documents and denying people's pension claims. So that's why we want the document, and I think we're entitled to it. If there's any questions.
Commissioner Cindy Cieslak for the respondents. I will briefly address Attorney Zimberlin's arguments. As to his first point that these documents are policy advice documents, they are not. The hearing officer reviewed these documents in camera and properly found that they were attorney-client privileged written legal memoranda. In the memorandums themselves, there's no creation of law or policy. It is an interpretation of the statute. The standard of eligibility for disability is contained within the statutes. Attorney Zimberlin is not entitled to the legal advice interpreting those statutes if he believes that the MEB or the Retirement Commission improperly applied the statutes. He has the ability to seek reconsideration and appeal those decisions both to the Retirement Commission and if he goes through the declaratory ruling process, eventually the Superior Court. As to the argument that my firm is not legal counsel to the Medical Examining Board. While there is no explicit statute saying that the Medical Examining Board itself can hire its own counsel, 5-155A allows the Retirement Commission to hire its counsel. 5-155A also allows the Retirement Commission to delegate certain duties. Specifically, the duties of a medical disability retirement has been delegated through the Retirement Commission and the state statutes to the Medical Examining Board. The Medical Examining Board has had the need to seek legal advice. The fact that they have sought legal advice creates the attorney-client privilege. The absence of a statute allowing them to seek legal advice doesn't mean that legal advice they sought from my firm is no longer privileged. The cases cited in the briefs which were submitted to you states that government agencies are permitted to seek legal advice, and it's for the public interest that the government agencies should be able to seek legal advice. Furthermore, I believe the hearing officer relied upon testimony by the Retirement Services Division Director, John Harrington, and the Assistant Comptroller and General Counsel to the Comptroller's Office, Yamina Menon, that my firm does provide legal advice to the Medical Examining Board and the Retirement Commission. Finally, as to Attorney Zimmerlin's last point that the agendas and the minutes of the Retirement Commission operate as a waiver to the attorney-client privilege, while the agendas and minutes mention that there is a written legal opinion, they do not discuss the contents of the written legal opinion. The reason that the written legal opinion is mentioned on the agenda and minutes is to satisfy the requirements to go into an executive session. The Commission and the Medical Examining Board cannot go into executive session for any reason. There has to be specific enumerated reasons that are identified by statute. One of those reasons is if there's a written legal opinion from an attorney. Another reason is for the discussion of private medical information. That's another reason that sometimes we go into executive session at the Medical Examining Board. But as it relates to the privileged memos that Attorney Zimmerlin has sought, the providing of legal advice through a written document is one of the permitted ways that a state agency or a public agency can enter executive session. So for the reasons that are in the brief that are submitted to you and for the reasons stated in the hearing officer's report, the respondents urge adoption of the report, but I am happy to answer any questions.
I know I want to take a break and look at the in-camera records, but are there any questions before we do that?
I have one question just real quick. Get confused on the initials and all that, but I heard you make an argument which I didn't quite follow in its detail, but was of interest to me, that there was a public disclosure of what? Because I, from little I know about law, the attorney-client privilege exists so long as it's not broken. And I'd like a clearer explanation of where through public disclosure the attorney-client privilege, which I understand has been articulated clearly to me, was broken. That one argument I'm particularly interested in. Understanding in specific.
In my September 21st, 2021 brief, I included the entire discussion of the public session where they actually discussed the documents. It's page 5. So it says post-hearing brief dash reply for document number 2021-0045. And that's the entire discussion. And on the meeting minutes and the agenda, it does post that there was a legal memo included. And when you do review these documents, of the in-camera documents, just ask yourself, does it clarify the definition of disability? If the answer is yes, it's a policy document and must be disclosed.
Attorney Zimmerlin, Commissioner Goldsby, can you address Attorney Cieslak's argument? My understanding of essentially the conflict is that she's saying, or you're saying rather, that the Medical Examining Board has, per statute, is not, I guess, legally allowed to obtain legal counsel. And what she's saying is, even though the statute says that they're not, there's other statutes that said that they can delegate that, and that she has still, or her firm, has still provided legal advice. So essentially what you're saying doesn't matter.
Well, the one thing that I will disagree with, kind of the phrasing, was I think she mentioned that CERC is allowed to delegate the determination of disability to the Medical Examining Board. That's not correct. The statute requires that the disability determinations be made by the Medical Examining Board. Does that answer your question? There is another statute that says that the Retirement Services Division, which is, I guess, CERC is the appellate body that oversees the Retirement Services Division. They do provide secretariat support where they're allowed to delegate those duties, but there's a specific statute that allows CERC to hire counsel for itself. There is no corollary statute allowing the MEB to hire outside counsel.
So even with that said, though, if there's something that says they're not allowed to hire outside counsel, but for whatever reason,
Rose Taylor has provided them with legal advice, would you agree then that that content of whatever that document is that has legal advice would then be subject to attorney-client privilege?
Not at all. If it's policy advice, it's subject to disclosure. Plain and simple. That's from the Harrington 2016 case. That's pretty clear on that. I mean, if they're doing legal interpretation on a statute and providing that legal interpretation to a decision maker who's relying on that interpretation to deny claims, which both my clients were, and they're still appealing it because of other issues as well. But basically, the medical examining board has secret documents that they're relying on to deny claims. And we're not allowed to see those documents. We're not allowed to see what the medical examining board's provided as far as interpretation of the definition of disability. The definition of disability is permanently unable to do the duties of your past work. If you have less than 10 years, you have to prove that, you know, your injury was sustained in work. I'm not sure of the exact words, but in one of my briefs, I did provide an example. Let's say a state employee was had a back injury before he was hired. Then he's hired and has another like minor back injury. How does the medical examining board do that? These interpretive documents provide guidance to the medical examining board on how to apply this kind of one sentence definition of disability. And they're relying on these documents and denying cases.
And that's not legal analysis?
It's policy.
Sorry, that's not legal analysis?
No.
Giving to your argument, that's policy analysis?
If it helps clarify the definition of disability, it's policy advice because the ME, there's only one definition of disability. The MEB must apply that one definition to every single state worker that it sees going in there. You can't have an individual definition for every single applicant. That's why there's just one. But, you know, with that, it comes, you know, a whole slew of different ways that people get up to the medical examining board, you know.
That's my last. How would you respond to that?
Certainly. I believe Attorney Zimberlin had phrased the question before you is, does our legal memo clarify the definition of disability? If the answer is yes, it's a policy document. I would pose that the question before you is, does my legal memo provide legal advice? If so, if the answer is yes, then the document is privileged and it qualifies as an attorney-client privilege communication. If it's appropriate through you, Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a clarification to Commissioner Goldsby's point.
Sure.
Commissioner Goldsby, you had said that Attorney Zimberlin had represented that the statute says the MEB cannot hire its own legal counsel. The statute that authorizes the governor to appoint members to the MEB is actually silent with respect to whether it can hire its own counsel. So there's no rule as to whether it can or cannot. And I would then say that based upon the case law cited in my brief, that government agencies are permitted to seek legal advice.
Attorney McGee, I wanted to ask you before we take a break and look at the in-camera records. Paragraph 21 of the decision, you indicate that the law firm of Rose Taylor provides legal, it serves as general counsel to CERC and the MEB. What evidence was there that Rose Taylor represented the MEB?
So, Danielle McGee is the hearing officer in this matter. Let me just start off by saying I am a bit surprised by this argument that Attorney Zimberlin is making in this regard because this was not something that was contested at the hearing. In 2021-0045, it was testified to that Rose Taylor represents both the MEB and CERC.
Who testified to that?
Attorney Cieslik actually testified to that. And
so what evidence was provided that the MEB engaged their law firm to represent them?
The testimony spoke to their attendance at meetings of the MEB, having advised the MEB pertaining to the disability applications on prior occasions, representing the MEB in other administrative proceedings, in addition to ones like the commission would have. There's quite a bit of testimony about the role of Rose Taylor in representing both the MEB and CERC with respect to the disability application determinations, and making the distinction that although these two agencies also operate in some respects within the Office of the Comptroller, the Office of the Comptroller has separate counsel. So there was quite a bit of testimony offered. Attorney Zimblin did not cross-examine counsel as to the scope of her representation. So I don't have anything in the record to dispute that her firm does, in fact, represent the MEB.
But counsel here testified that they represent the MEB.
Yes.
They didn't testify that they had an engagement letter. They just testified that they are an attorney.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, I'd like to take a recess for about 5 or 10 minutes to look at the in-camera records. Thanks.
Would I just be make one point responding to Attorney McGee's comment?
Sure.
It's not unroutine for attorneys to claim representation of people when they're not actually representing them to protect documents of their actual clients in law. So it's not really uncommon what's going on.
Thank you.
May I be heard on that?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Just to reply to that, the fact that it may not be unroutine, I just have to put on the record that my firm does represent the medical examining board. And I just have to say I'm not lying about that. And the agency itself, so this matter is very similar to the next matter you will hear. And so in the first matter, I provided testimony on behalf of the respondents. In the second matter, I brought in other agency officials to provide that same testimony. So there are other agency officials who have testified. Attorney Yamina Menon and Attorney John Harrington have both testified to that.
And Attorney Cieslak, like you testified before the hearing officer that you represented the MAB in other matters prior to this one. Is that correct?
Yes, we have
represented. I just want to know about your testimony. You represented. You made testimony, too, before the hearing officer that you represented the MEB regarding other matters prior to this matter.
That's accurate. My testimony indicated that we represented the MEB in other agency matters, not before this agency, other state agencies like the CHRO.
Thank you.
Okay. And can I just...
we're going to go off record.